Hello and welcome to episode 264 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is August 9th, 2021. I'm Rollo McFlugel, and with me is my co-host, who is over there making noises, Slappy Jones. We are both at McFlugel.com, and the show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/264. Be sure to check out our sponsor, LibertyMugs.com, where you can buy all of your Liberty mugs.
Buy all of the Liberty mugs.
Yes, all of them. And you get some t-shirts and other things too. Also, if you're interested in learning about Bitcoin, we've got two.
Who isn't?
No, everyone should be. Two sources for you. 10 hours of Bitcoin.com. And then also our site, BitcoinTrickle.com, where we send you Bitcoin information at a little bit of a trickle at a time. So it's good. So, Slappy, we have this episode that we recorded a few weeks ago.
Yep.
That we had on hold. Do you remember what we talked about? Because I am pretty much blank.
Was it the one with the ad? For the bank ad? From the
Yes, it was. It was. Yeah. It was.
I was at, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was. Hopefully it was.
It was. It definitely was. So this ad was called Walking Tall. What was the subtitle for this?
Something about the saving. Like, it was about savings, basically.
Yeah,
it was a bank advertise, which you'll hear the ad.
Yeah, it was a bank ad from 1969 about saving. And it's amazing, you know, what just a couple decades ago advertisements were like for how to manage your money and everything and what they were saying. And it was, we love to criticize banks and advertisements and marketing and everything nowadays because a lot of it's really crappy because we're in fiat world. But by any standards, it was a great piece, like about the importance of saving. So it just wouldn't happen today.
Like the same ad would not, it wouldn't even make sense today.
Unless you're talking about Bitcoin, because this is how all the Bitcoiners talk about now. And I think we mentioned in the episode, but if you listen to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan, he has read this piece too. But we thought it was so good that for the people that don't listen to him or maybe didn't catch that episode,
you can listen twice.
Yeah, to get it out there for more people. So it's a good little piece, and hope you enjoy it. I had something. Oh, I've been. This reminds me, or it doesn't remind me, but I am on a Twitter timeout. I said a no word to George Takei.
Why'd you do that?
Because
he
was being one of those people with his tweets. It was bad. So Slappy, that means I'm still going to be in timeout tomorrow. So you're going to have to do the episode announcement on Twitter. Do you think you can handle that? And you can unmute yourself. Are you there?
Am I mute? What is going on here? Who is the sound engineer? What is going on?
We have no sound engineer, and I think you're kind of...
We fired him. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
What in the world is going on? Can I handle it? It's a big responsibility. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see if you can get more than, like, the 4 or 5 retweets that I usually do.
Okay.
Maybe throw in a tractor reference on the tweet, spice it up a little bit.
That's just to be sure, because you don't remember if you got one in.
That's true. I really don't. I didn't even remember what we talked about, let alone whether I got a tractor reference in. Mm-hmm. But interesting things happening in the Bitcoin. Before we cut to the recording, interesting things happening in the Bitcoin world, and I'm not there to give my... kind of what's it, narration of it on the timeline, but government's doing stuff, trying to do stuff with Bitcoin.
Without getting into it, who's a broker now and who's not?
Yeah, there's a lot of Bitcoiners talking about, oh, call your senator and do this stuff and get involved. And, you know, we could have our own episode talking about this. So I'll just be very brief and you can throw in your 2 cents if you want, Slappy.
Yeah, whatever.
But, you know, we spent the last how many years on this podcast and blog and everything that we do talking about how we reject the government and everything. And then once we have Bitcoin, it's now a thing that just like totally obsoletes the government and makes it, you know, it's the mousetrap for the government.
Yeah. I mean, they're kinda.
So, I don't see the need to call my senator or anything else. It's, you know, Bitcoin's working. It's going to do what it's going to do.
Isn't Pat Toomey your senator?
Yeah. But I don't really care. It's like when people say, oh, what are you going to do when, if the government goes after Bitcoin? And I say, well, let it do it. If I didn't think that Bitcoin was government hard, no matter what, pretty much, I wouldn't have Bitcoin. So my money is where my mouth is, and let's go. It might be a little bit annoying and painful in the meantime as the government does whatever the government does, but in the long run, it does not have the ability to defeat Bitcoin. So just put the chips on the table. And Slappy, you're muted again.
I had some really good comments in there too. I was wondering why you weren't replying to me. You were ignoring.
I doubt they were good, but
they were great.
All right. Well, do you have any comments to add on to that?
No, other than that, how about I give a quick plug for the Yeti Cold, because I started that over the weekend. And it was much easier than I expected it to be. And it does get it's intimidating when you hear, yeah, you just need to wipe a computer and run Ubuntu. But the directions are so straightforward and so easy to do. And my Bitcoin Core is going to be synced probably tonight. And it really started syncing Sunday morning. So the SSD is pretty good, pretty quick. And I'll have cold storage ready to go this week. So I am pretty pumped about that. So.
Yeah, multi-sig paperwall cold storage.
Yeah.
So hats off to JW Weatherman and his son Will and everybody else who works on Yeti Cold.
Incredible. Like, I don't have computer experience. As earlier in this episode, Rallo joking that I have to make a tweet with a episode announcement. I mean, if I can do it, literally anyone can. So if you have any Bitcoin that you think should be held on to for a long time, the price of Yeti Cold is pretty reasonable.
Well, because people don't understand this. Like, the price of Yeti Cold is free.
It is free and open.
Yeah, it's free and open source software. You got to buy some hardware, like 2 laptops if you don't have some sitting around that you can wipe and then, you know, a couple USB sticks, some CDs if you don't have them.
Yeah. By the way, the computer I bought, because if you just go on to like Dell.com and look for computers, everything's going to be like $500 or more, but found one that Rallo sent me a link to, and it was $140.
Yep.
And, that was on, what was it, on eBay? Yeah. eBay.
Yeah, so, you know, if you buy 2 of them, you spend $300 on hardware to have really, 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 really good security.
And if you have Bitcoin that's worth saving, that you want to save, $140 or $280 plus shipping, or $300, a couple other bucks for a few other things and a little bit of time, I think is well worth locking up that Bitcoin.
Right, especially considering other thing, like a lot of other hardware wallets. This is what a lot of people like to use for for long storage and offline storage probably doesn't cost that much less than that.
Yeah, not much less.
And plus, you can wipe the computers and do whatever you want with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you have a computer right now that you want to use, so you've got options.
Yeah, back up your data, wipe that one, use it, you're good. But really incredibly easy to use and easy to run. And there's a video they produced that goes along with the setup where, I mean, you're literally watching the guy click things. I mean, if you have the skills to copy and paste, you can do it.
Yeah. So it's good timing you did that within the past week after we were talking about multi-sig stuff with Phil last week. So it's good stuff.
That's all I have.
And I also want to mention, if you want to go back, we had JW and Will talk about Yeti Cold on episode 171. So if you want some more details on what Yeti Cold's all about, go back and check out that episode.
Yep.
So without any further ado, let's get into this week's episode. So believe it or not, we're going to talk about Bitcoin today.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
But we were kind of talking before we started recording. We really weren't sure what we were going to talk about. And you were kind of telling me a story about someone you knew. About an uncomfortable situation they were in. It reminded me of this article that Guy Swan has read on his show. When was this? Does he have a date on this when it was posted? Oh, it was back in November of 2020. Guy's Take, number 36, Walking Tall. We'll link to this on the show notes page. But Slappy, I don't know how much information you want to give about the story
I mean, it's just someone who was put in a bad situation at work and doesn't have enough money to do what they want to do. So you're forced to give up your morals, essentially.
Yeah. And it reminded me of this little article, not even an article, actually. It's actually an ad.
An advertisement.
Yeah. For a bank from 1963. It's called The Pleasure of Walking Tall. And we're going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so you want me to just read through it, and then we'll just discuss it?
Yeah, and as you're listening to this, just kind of think about what you're hearing and compare it to kind of what happens today and how... you know, savings work today and just the very stark difference. Again, this was 1963. So what was that? Like 58 years ago. So, you know, not a short period of time ago, but not that long ago. But let's we don't want to have commentary before we read it, so why don't you go ahead and read this. Yeah.
All right, let's start. Okay, so here we go. Your savings, believe it or not, affect the way you stand, the way you walk, the tone of your voice. In short, your physical well-being and confidence. A man without savings is always running. He must. He must take the first job offered, or nearly so. He sits nervously on life's chairs, because any small emergency throws him in the hands of others. Without savings, a man must be too grateful. Gratitude is a fine thing in its place, but a constant state of gratitude is a horrible place in which to live. A man with savings can walk tall. He can appraise opportunities in a relaxed way, have time for judicious estimates, and not be rushed by economic necessity. A man with savings can afford to resign from his job if his principles so dictate. And for this reason, he'll never need to do so. A man who can afford to quit is much more useful to his company and therefore more promotable. He can afford to give money. He can afford to give his company the benefit of his most candid judgments. A man always concerned about necessities such as food and rent can't afford to think in long-range career terms. He must dart to the most immediate opportunity for ready cash. Without savings, he will spend a lifetime of darting, dodging. A man with savings can afford the wonderful privilege of being generous in family or neighborhood emergencies. He can take a level stare into the eyes of any man, friend, stranger, or enemy. It shapes his personality and character. The ability to save has nothing to do with the size of income. Many high-income people who spend it all are on a treadmill, darting through life like minnows. The dean of American bankers, J.P. Morgan, once advised a young broker, "Take waste out of your spending. You'll drive haste out of your life." Will Rogers put it this way, "I'd rather have the company of a janitor living on what he earned last year than an actor spending what he'll earn next year." If you don't need money for college, a home, or retirement, then save for self-confidence. The state of your savings does have a lot to do with how tall you walk. The end, at least in what I'm reading.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah, that's just about as perfect.
I mean, if you told me a Bitcoiner wrote this 2 weeks ago, I'd be like, yeah, I love it. That's it. That's what Bitcoin is showing us.
Right. It coalesces everything that we talk about with the importance of Bitcoin, with time preference, with hard, sound money, and brings it all in a read that takes a minute or two. And it's an advertisement for a bank trying to convince someone to save their money. Yeah. So interesting thing with the dates. We said this was 1973. What happened in 1971?
Anything important in the world of finance? I don't know. No, obviously Nixon closed the gold window, officially removing gold from the currency at all.
Yeah. And that put us really on the crash course for where we are today.
And on that, we talked about this website briefly a couple weeks ago, but WTF happened in 1971. Check it out and scroll through it. You'll look at every chart. Something interesting happens in 1971.
Yeah, I'll put that on the show notes. I'm trying to take notes down so I can remember what to actually put down for this. But, man, I'm all topsy turvy over here. All right, there it is. Okay, let me pull this up. It's, just think about it. I mean, how many Americans, or how many people do you know, maybe it's you, are like living paycheck to paycheck, and if you lose your job, you basically lose your life and your well-being.
It's an incredibly high percent. If you're sitting there thinking that's me, you are not alone, man. There are a lot of people like that. People who go to good schools and have good jobs and have nice cars, who if they miss a paycheck, they're in deep trouble.
And we're not trying to like wag our fingers at you for this way, because it's the dark reality of the world that we live in, is that it's really impossible to save with dollars, with the money that we have. And, you know, when we're talking about this before we started recording, like you're saying that, you know, you go to school, you grow up thinking just like, yeah, you go to work hard at school, get an education, go to college, get your job, and you'll be able to like, you know, do your thing. No matter what it is, you know, just do what you want to do.
I mean, I've heard the advice given, don't worry about the cost, just get into the best school possible and go.
Yeah, I heard that. I was told, do not let the cost of college affect your decision. Just really, really bad advice. But I mean, that's what we all expect to be able to do, is that you go work your 40 hours a week
and you know, you earn a good living and you can support a family, own a house, have a car, take a vacation, and just be able to, you know, go to sleep at night without having to worry about tomorrow or if there's going to be a bill that pops up that you can't pay. But what do you know? Are you familiar with the statistic where it's like the percentage of Americans who can't afford like
$1,000 or an unexpected bill?
Yeah.
I've seen it. I don't remember the number.
Let me see if I can look it up real quick.
I don't remember. It's shockingly high. And not, you know, I mean, now I'm moving along in my career here. I'm earning more money than I was in years past, but not that long ago, I was one of those people.
Yeah. So this was as of January 11th. This is according to CNBC, and who knows where, you know, they get these numbers. But just 39% of Americans can afford a $1,000 unexpected expense.
In other words, 61% cannot.
Yeah, according to a new survey from Bankrate.com. That's
self-reporting, too.
Yeah.
I'd imagine.
I wouldn't be able to.
You probably have some bias in a sense, like people have pride and say, like, yeah, I can afford it even if they can't.
Right. Or think that they can, or, you know, have some sort of, they've convinced themselves. But I mean, that's a pretty sad state of affairs.
Uh-huh. And I was browsing Twitter, just kind of a related topic. It was earlier in the day, and so I can't remember the Twitter handle. But it was something about the vaccines and kids in school over the age of two. No, it was kids. CDC or some organization recommends kids over two in school have to wear masks. And someone said, two? Like, wow, how young are you getting these kids? And someone replied, like, daycare, you ever heard of it? People can't afford to live on one salary today. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And it made me think of exactly this thing we're talking about today. Because that is like a reality. I mean, we could talk about that and talk about some of the choices on spending on what things you're spending money on and what are really necessities versus pleasures or nice to have or entertainment. But that's not the point because it's just that hard and that most people would say it is impossible to do it.
Well, look at how big of that's a really, I'm really glad you brought up daycare and school. I don't know if this was your intention or not, but this is how like insidious this problem is and how you get caught in this feedback loop where you need to have a two parent income because the dollar is so bad. And so you need to, because you have two parents working, you can't raise your kids yourself, so you got to send them to daycare.
That.
Right. And so from a very early age, someone else is raising your kids.
Someone else who likely just graduated college
is
and
probably
is one of those people who is just chasing dollars to pay back their loans from school.
Right. It's probably an absolute dope.
Yeah, it could be a nice person and a good person and whatever, right, and trying to do, but you're trusting your kids to, you know, a 22-year-old who couldn't.
Someone who's got to, yeah, someone who's got to go along to get along, because if they don't, if they do something that
rocks the boat, later.
Yeah, and so they have to, because they're not able to stand tall, they got to just kind of do whatever they're told. Without being able to say like, hey, I don't think I should be raising or making these decisions for this kid. It's not my kid. I'm just supposed to be here making
he's
sure
he's clocking in and clocking out.
Right.
And that being said, like, I think a lot of people who work at daycares generally care about the kids and otherwise they wouldn't take the job to begin with. But man, that's a tough job hanging out with infants all day. And that can get on anyone's patience.
Right. And I said, maybe I shouldn't have said dope, but I mean, well, it's not exactly,
I mean,
a
if
job.
If we look at the general public.
Right. But it's not exactly a job that, you know, people of high, you know, caliber are necessarily going to take. So, you're going to pull from not exactly the cream of the crop to.
I know what you're saying. But I do think, I'm going to defend them a bit and defend these people because I do think there's a lot of people, especially women, who just want to care for kids.
I think it's
in their body, in their nature. And some of them want to take jobs there. Some of them think they'll be good at it. I love kids. I would love to do that. And, you know, it's not a lot of money, so I'm going to move on. But it's something to do now. But either way, let's give put them in the best light. We don't even have to trash. I'm sure there's plenty of bad healthcare workers. I mean, daycare workers too. You probably don't have to look that hard for them.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to like really criticize them. I'm just being kind of blunt about mm-hmm. what the situation is because
they don't make a lot of money.
Right. And so like this standing tall or walking tall article said, was it like these people, like they don't have that many options.
Yep.
Most likely. And so they have to just kind of do what they're told. And when this new thing comes, they're more likely to just kind of, do the go along to get, I know I keep saying that, but just go along, get away.
Let's float through life. Let's not rock the boat. Let's get to the end of the day. Let's clock in, clock out and get paid.
So you've got the two parents that are doing that. Because they need to be able to afford just a normal family life. Because they can't raise their kids because they're at work, they have to send their kids to the daycare or they have people doing the same thing. And then these kids are in this system from a very early age that's like probably poison.
Yeah.
They're getting taught, and so these kids are getting raised in a really bad.
I would say that for sure.
Right, a really bad environment, even if it's just like we'll call it a private daycare, they very quickly go into the public government school system, and so they get indoctrinated there, and that school system, Let's face it, school today is basically a babysitting service for the reasons that we already mentioned. And so you're getting kids fed through this indoctrination system and they come out the other end. What do you expect them?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not able to like think well. You're not able to be a critical thinker, not be a good problem solver. So you're not going to be able to be someone who's a good employee. Or at least someone who's a good employee compared to the guy in the standing tall article, who's able to like be someone who's got a lot of skills and marketable skills that he's able to be like, hey, if I can just go someplace else because a lot of other firms or businesses want me, and so take advantage of the fact that I can be very blunt and honest about, how I think about things. Because it's going to be really expensive to replace me or to not have my services.
Yep.
But this public school system and this daycare system, that's generally not what they're producing. We get people who are, critical thinkers by accident in that system. So what kind of people do you think they're going to grow up to be? Do you think they're going to be people that are going to be able to like pull themselves out from
the hopeless and turn to government and say, give me a stimulus.
Right. And take jobs where they have to just keep working in order to get by or now they just have a stimulus. And so they can just sit it. Like, it's just, I would love,
I mean, like, yeah, there's a lot of companies begging for employees right now.
Yeah. I would love for the, whoever wrote this ad.
I wonder if that person's still alive.
Yeah. He's probably pretty old, but whoever wrote that ad. Yeah. to see the state of where we are now, where people are taking, you know, stimulus money just to sit at home. And like, what is that? It's just,
like, this ad wouldn't even make sense today. No one would ever post this today with the US dollars. No bank would ever say this.
Right. It doesn't make any sense except to someone who understands hard money.
Like, it would not make any sense at all to people. And they would, like, they would say the only one who can do that is someone who makes $1 million a year. and then that's what, you know, in sports and I guess in general in life, but there was always a thing. You know, I played some football in my day, but when someone would get their contract, their big contract, we would say now he has FU money. You know, why do you need that big job, big contract to have FU money? Why can't you do that on your middle class salary?
Well, because you have no way of retaining the value of it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And but according to this ad, yeah, you can. And that's the line at the bottom there, the Will Rogers. I'd rather hang out with a janitor living on what he earned last year than an actor spending what he'll earn next year. Like, no one would say that today.
Right. And with, you know, all the easy, cheap credit that's available, everyone's living on next year's.
Exactly. Everyone is in deep debt.
Like, even people that are making, you know, good money are basically living paycheck to paycheck.
I've a couple anecdotal stories there too. That I guess we don't need to go into, but people living in really nice neighborhoods who got themselves in trouble with really nice cars.
Right.
More than one of those stories from people I know.
Yeah. Well, the bank says I can afford it. I can put it on, you know, I can get credit for it. I can make this work. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you realize, you know, you're most of your paycheck, you know, you're a slave to whatever loans you got to pay off because they take your stuff if you don't pay it off.
Uh-huh.
So it's really just
to the point, like, can't even really take care of your family because you have so many toys that you're a slave to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just can't afford certain things because you have to pay for that car and that house and the market changed and you didn't sell as much as you did the year before.
Yeah, it's a bad. I mean, I have anecdotes from people I know too, where it's stuff like this, and you just go, you hear them talk about, you know, what they're doing, and you're just like, man, you're.
And I do also, like, kind of the point in why I wanted to talk about this or you know, I don't know what your main reason was, but why I thought it would be a good topic is because it's like we could sit here and rip these people and say you made stupid decisions because they did, but they had no reason not to make them.
Right.
Like, the whole system directs you to that. And so if you're like you were saying, you might get a rational thinker out of that system, but that's by accident. It's like if you find someone who can save money, it's by accident. That's not the way it's designed to go. And it's not the way everyone pushes you. It's not the way everything is set up to be. I mean, the first real decision, first of all, there's this idea that everyone has to go to college. And if you don't, you're a loser. And you hear this from people who are contractors who are making good money. And whenever I have a contractor come here, I'm like, I love that they didn't go to college. A lot of them. Some of them did, but a lot of them didn't. And I love that they didn't. They went out and started a business, and they're doing well, and they're successful. And, you know, but even you could even hear them talking when you just hear their story. Like, how'd you get into this, you know, and they're talking. It's almost like they are almost apologizing. I find this a lot, not everyone. But it's almost like they think – or at least the way they're selling their story is like they made a mistake not going to college, but somehow lucked out and did this. And it's like, no. Yeah. You were the smart one. Don't say you messed up. But it's so ingrained in our society that, like, you have to go to college. And so you're 17 years old and you're looking at all these schools and it's like, this one's 40,000, this one's 60,000, 80,000. And that means nothing to you, to a lot of kids. Yeah. And it's like, sure, well, I'm going to go to college and graduate and have a great job and I'll be able to pay for this. And it's like, man, well, there's 300 grand, 200 grand or 50 grand, whatever. It's a big debt. It's a big debt to pay off, and it's the very first thing you do. But you make those payments every month, and then it's like, well, I need a house and a car too, and it's, you know, and then whatever else you need. Well, I might as well get the credit card and go to Florida for vacation or Disney World or whatever.
You know? Yeah, you got to enjoy life.
Yeah, and it's the whole, like if you're not taking a nice vacation, it's like something's wrong with you.
Well, I think a big part of the problem too, as you mentioned, college, is that like your formative years when you're graduating high school and going to college, and it gets ingrained in you that you get the reward before you have to work for it and pay for it with college nowadays.
Oh yeah.
Because you get a loan without having any really anything to show for yourself.
Literally.
And they give you a loan. They give you a loan to go to college. And then you get your degree, and then now all of a sudden it's just like, well, now you have to pay it back. And people are like, well, I don't understand why I have to pay this.
They're actually saying that now, that it should be forgiven.
Right. Whereas back in the day, in like 1963, when this ad for this bank was written, I mean, a lot of people, when they went to college, they worked over the summer to pay for college, or they saved up money before that.
My dad did that in the 70s. Yeah. You work in the summer to pay for his college. Like, no kid can do that today. That's not possible. You can't find a part-time job to pay you $60,000 in the summer. Now, you might be able to be an entrepreneur, strike it big, because you're one of those, you know, special people who has an idea when they're 18 years old and can make $60,000 in a summer. Good. But then you should probably quit college and keep working.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So it just, you know, when you take a step back and look at all of how everything's working and how everything goes and the environment that everybody's in, it makes like such perfect sense that we're in a spot where we are. But on the other hand, when you change the environment a little bit.
Oh, sure.
And,
I see.
And you have Bitcoin, then suddenly there's an incentive to start saving. Suddenly there's an incentive to work hard and try to be productive, because, you know, if you're productive now, you can, you know, reap a lot of many more rewards in the future, because you're holding sound money, because you're able to actually save. You're able to actually transport the value they're creating now into the future, where it will be even more valuable. And so suddenly you don't care about the fancy car, the fancy house, the nice vacations. It's more like, well, I can like set my kids up and their kids up in a way, or I can just like have savings right now where if I lose my job,
where I can have FU money, where you can tell your boss FU.
Right. If my boss tells me something, I need to do something that I don't believe I should be doing, or else I get fired, I can say, well, fine.
Fire me.
I quit. Like, you won't even give him the opportunity to fire you. You just say,
I'm done.
And I'll live off my savings for a while until I find something. And I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're living paycheck to paycheck, like, you're absolutely terrified of losing your job. Like, imagine.
You literally can't afford to lose that job.
Yeah. Now you can't, like, feed your family and you got to go on the dole or, you know, have something else not great happen to you.
Right.
And I mean, it's not just individuals. Like, businesses are doing the same thing with stuff. I mean, you look at, like, crumbling infrastructure.
The bailouts, man.
Well, not only that, but just I see it in my industry, in like petrochemical and manufacturing, like the stuff, like a lot of capital equipment and a lot of facilities are like deteriorating because you have to focus on what's going to make you money right now. Because if you take a break to focus on other stuff that has a much longer term payout or doesn't necessarily pay out directly, but helps you be more profitable in the long term, like you can't really do that. You have to keep making money right now. Well, and so
yeah, go ahead.
No, finish. So things that are like, you know, taking care of infrastructure, like utility type things, like we're just an example of the industry I work in. Things that are like the lifeblood of your plant, but don't directly make you money, like your process or cooling water, your steam, your air systems, just like your basic steel and structural stuff. It's difficult to be like, hey, we got to do like a big outage where we like do major repairs and get this all up to snuff. Because otherwise it's just going to keep like falling apart little by little. And then we're going to have to like kind of use belts and suspenders to keep it going. And like the engineers are the people that are like on the ground looking at it or yelling and screaming about it. But the people that have the pocketbooks in the business are like, well, yeah, like, but that doesn't make me money right now. And we need to make money. So like, we can't direct resources there. We have to do this other stuff and just kind of keep pushing forward. It's like saying, you know, if you got to get across country and you're driving a car and you're like, the engine's all kind of out of oil and we need to buy oil, but buying oil is not like directly going to make your car go forward. It ultimately does. And if you don't have oil in your engine, you can't go forward. But the person, you know, the other people in the car are like, well, you want to buy oil, but we're saying we need to buy gasoline because we need to keep going. And you're like, but without oil, the engine's not going to, like, the gasoline's going to be useless. And they're like, yeah, but, like, man, we're on a deadline. We got to get to where we're going. And I'm not trying to, like, blame, you know, these managers or anybody in these companies. It's the reality of the world that they're in. And it's really difficult to get out of that cycle, just like it is for the typical family that needs two incomes and needs to work at the crummy jobs that they're in with the cruddy bosses that they have.
The jobs they don't want, and then they, you know, blame capitalism or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be much better, much more productive and fruitful if you're able to raise your own kids, but, you know, they're really not put in a position where they can do that. And so they have to make these ultimately, you know, I don't want to say wrong decisions, but just less than ideal decisions that end up, you know, in the long run, did pretty deleterious to what they're ultimately trying to accomplish. But there's the fear of like not even being able to, like, you know, you're trying to survive another day. You had something that you were going to kind of.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, you talked about your industry, and I was thinking of mine because in the insurance world, on the life and health is what my license is. So, but I don't do health insurance, although technically disability insurance. So anyway, the companies are usually have a long-term outlook because you're looking at the law of large numbers. You're looking at mortality rates. You're trying to get enough premium dollars to pay your claims, have a little bit more on top to pay your employees, your overhead and all that stuff. And they do these calculations. But when you're in a low interest rate environment for a long time, you know, in the 80s, interest rates were very high. So a lot of, I don't got to get into the history of life insurance here. But bottom line is, there's a company, this was news maybe 2-3 weeks ago, just pulled out of the life insurance company. This company's been around since the 1800s. Now, they still exist as a company. They just stopped selling life insurance. And life insurance is one of the most predictable insurances there is. Like, you know how many people out of this group are going to die. You don't know which ones, but you know how many. And you get a big enough pool of people, and it's the math is pretty simple to do. And they pulled out. And that is, I got to think more companies are going to be doing that because of the way the dollar is and the uncertainty with the dollar and the low interest rate to go along with it, that it doesn't make sense for them to stay in the business because they can't invest that money to earn the returns they need to pay their claims. And so they pulled out completely. And this is a big, well-known company. You've seen their ads. They're still around. They just don't do life insurance anymore. Mm-hmm. And we saw MassMutual, I'll say their name, a year ago, or not quite a year ago, was it the end of last year, invested a decent amount of money in Bitcoin.
Yep.
So hopefully we see more of these companies doing that because they're looking for ways to protect that money. And I think MassMutual is going to be happy they did that.
Yeah, because, I mean, otherwise... How does everything keep going if no one's changing the oil in the engine of the economy?
Exactly.
Like it's gonna blow up.
It's gonna get too hot.
Yeah, things are gonna come grinding to a halt, and it's gonna be pretty painful. We've talked about this book before, but the Vampire Economy. It's a book written in the late 30s about doing business in Nazi Germany.
Yep. Before it was written before the war.
Yeah. And when you have that fascism, the system of fascism, it puts what we're talking about, the problems with what we have now, like to the pedal to the metal. Just thinking about, oh, we need to just keep going, doing what we're doing right now and forget about the future. And it ended up just absolutely destroying like basically every aspect of the German economy. And so, you know, good things don't happen when that kind of thing happens. Man, we're kind of seeing it right now. I mean, if you can't look at the prices of wood because of inflation and just lack of production. If you're not able to use, you know, the material that you originally wanted to for your project, you've got to start using like secondary things that probably isn't as good. But you're trying to still produce the same kind of thing. So you're marketing whatever product you're making as the same thing, but you're using less than ideal materials for it. One, you're probably just not going to get as good of a product. And two, you don't know really the long-term effects of how that, of what those changes are going to do, how that's going to affect your manufacturing process, the life of whatever you're building. A great example of Nazi Germany was they invented, nitrile, which is like a synthetic rubber, mm-hmm. which nowadays it's everywhere. It's super cheap. It's used all the time. Back then, I mean, they had a natural rubber shortage and they were scrambling to figure out something to deal with that. And so they were able to invent this synthetic rubber. And so they went full speed ahead on it, but it was a little bit different than natural rubber, obviously. And so it wore down their capital equipment faster because they just tried to chew on the puzzle pieces and just mash it right in there. And it affected a lot of the stuff. So they wore down their capital equipment a lot faster. And so they, all of a sudden they have the expenses of trying to deal with that. And so it just turns everything upside down on its head. So it's just a really, really painful, bad thing to go through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just imagine if you've got a tractor and instead of being able to use steel for the frame, you had to use plastic. And you got a hot engine in there. You know, you think the plastic's going to last as long as the steel? Probably not.
Well, tractor fuel can't melt steel beams. I'm sure it can melt plastic.
Leaded gasoline. That's true. But no, I mean, we see it with a great example would be like refrigerators. I was talking to someone the other day about it. Remember my grandparents had a refrigerator from like the 50s.
Yeah.
My uncle had it until recently when I don't know what he did with it. He might have actually taken it with him. But he had the refrigerator in his basement for a while. That thing lasted 60 years.
So it's kind of funny. I was just a couple weekends ago, I was at a family member's house at their lake house. And they got a beautiful house right on a lake. Got to play on the kayaks, the whole deal. It was fun. They have a fridge on their deck there, on their porch, with the beer and everything in it. And it's the old, like, it was probably from the 60s. Still works perfectly fine.
Yep. Yeah. And it's not because we've gotten worse at making refrigerators necessarily, but if they were to make refrigerators the same way that they did back then, today, then refrigerators would cost just an absurd amount of money. This is part of the problem of inflation, is that they shrink the, well, if you're buying like food or something, the great example I remember is my mom complaining about you can't buy half gallons of ice cream anymore. It's all 1.5 or 1.75 quarts of ice cream, but it costs the same amount. And that was a while ago.
Yeah.
That was ages ago. I remember she was saying that. And then, with stuff like refrigerators and other, long-term consumer goods, is that they, in order to keep prices without shooting through the roof, they got to lower the quality of how they're making stuff in order for you to not get like absolute sticker shock. But the problem is with that, since they don't last as long, you're end up spending more money in the long run anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a really, really, really bad system that, I think that's why we're so like, that's why we yell and scream about Bitcoin so much. It's not just, hey, you can become wealthy, or
you can
turn
have more
your
US dollars.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. Well, not you can have more US dollars,
no, but more
more
purchasing power. Right.
Right.
Part of it.
Yeah. But that only happens on an individual level because like it's happening. Those effects are rippling throughout the economy and you're gaining all these advantages where people want to hold on to their money for longer. And so it forces, it's less frivolous spending. It's making sure that resources are allocated where they need to be because people aren't getting easy credit and built and bidding up prices on materials for whatever frivolous, stupid thing that pops in your head that you want to do. You're really only going to engage in a project that you really feel is going to be beneficial to you, because otherwise, if you just hold on to the money, it's going to appreciate in value.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
you'll use it when you need it.
Right. And so it forces businesses and people that want to try to make you part for your money to really, really convince you and really showed you that, you know, it will be better if you part with that money than holding on to it, because they got something really, really good to offer you. I mean, money is great and all to hold, but ultimately it's just a tool for you to be able to like transform your specialized productive labor into other useful things. Like, you can't eat money, you can't live in money, especially with Bitcoin. It's all digital, so you're really only limited to using it literally only as money,
right?
As a medium of exchange.
Can't
so
use it as wallpaper.
Yeah, can't burn it. So it like the point of all this is that you want it to you know, well, just function as money.
Right.
So.
Well, you got anything else to add on the story?
Nope.
You bring it to a close for today?
Yeah.
You have a free market story?
Yeah, I went fishing last night and caught some fish. So I'll be able to have a couple meals.
There you go. Cool. What'd you use to catch them?
Bloodworms.
Nice. The best kind of worms.
Oh, yeah. They're creepy and they bleed a lot.
Yeah.
Hence the name. So, all right. I guess that about wraps this up. So the show notes page will be at flugel.com/260. We'll link to the things we talk about. And
interesting, because 260 might be airing after 261.
Well, I think we'll probably change that around.
Okay.
So, all right. There's no reason to keep recording now.
All right.
All right, we're back live. And we're just saying, we don't remember how we ended that recording. And obviously we didn't go back and listen to any of it to know. So what I do know is we will have the link to the Walking Tall ad. That'll be in the show notes page, mcflugel.com/264. And yeah, I guess that's it, right, Slappy?
That's all I got.
I already said tractors, and
got it done.
Yeah,
cool.
Check out 10 hours of Bitcoin.com, Bitcoin or BitcoinTrickle.com too.
Yeah, and then go buy all the Liberty mugs.
There we go, full circle. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Peace.